I'm pleased to bring on right now one of my all-time faves in the Cleveland media, Matt Lodi. Matt, how are you, buddy?
What up, D-Man?
Good to have you. We've been talking about, producer Brad and I have been talking about the loudest venues we've been in. You've been to many, many, many Indians games dating many years. What's the loudest you can recall a Cleveland venue? And I guess you could throw in football if you wanted to.
Yeah,
that's kind of a separate animal.
I think there was a special place for the old Cleveland Stadium for Browns games back in the 80s.
Yes, you're right.
I specifically remember a game late in the 88 season when the Browns went through, I think it was four quarterbacks, and Don Strock led them to a win over the Oilers that then propelled them to a wild card game, and then they lost that game on Christmas Eve to the Oilers. But I remember during that comeback, that place was shaking about as loud as I'd have ever heard anything. And at that point, you know, I hadn't been to a million games in my life, but I'd been to, you know, a few. As far as Progressive Jacobs Field is concerned, I probably two moments stick out. And I know Bob DiBiasio would agree because he and I discussed this once at length over dinner. And one of them had to be the Sandy Homer in the game four in 97 against Rivera that tied the game. And then the Indians went on to win the game. And then
last night, yep.
Jared Wright pitched them to the ALCS where they then beat Baltimore. And then I'd have to say 16, of course, with Rajay Davis. I know Tom Hamilton has mentioned that one. I think Rosenhaus has mentioned that one. I don't know if I remember just a specific moment where it was almost like, you know, because again, at that moment, you just felt all the momentum was on their side and they were going to win the game. And, you know, I remember standing next to Dave Chudowski at that time, who was doing sports for Channel 3. And we both kind of looked at each other with this, like, just disbelief. And we weren't the only ones, by the way. I mean, everybody that was in that auxiliary kids clubhouse where a lot of the radio and TV media were that night were like, you know, everybody ran to their laptops to rewrite stories, to tweet, to do whatever. It was, you know, and now that you watch that, of course, you appreciate, you know, even though they lost the game and it still hurts and everything, you just appreciate how much fun that, you know, that 16, you know, series was. Not only that series, but of course the Boston and Toronto series is too. They were a blast. But I just think that moment, maybe the Lindor homer in what, game one, I think it was, against Toronto has to be up there too in that year, because at that point a lot of people thought the Indians weren't going to beat Toronto, and then you know, they pitched. I think it was 0-0 going in the sixth or seventh inning when Lindor hit that homer, and you know, they obviously won that game and then went on to win the series 4-1. So those couple stick out to me.
Fast forward to today, Matt. I'm going to get the appetizer out of the way, which is the toy department, which is sports, before we get into the meat on the bone, which is why I had you on, really. But tell me about your assessment of the Indians as they take a break here today before the Kansas City series, coming off a disappointing series, again, in Baltimore.
Yeah.
Eight games out in the Central, half game out wild card. How do you see this team?
I mean, I think you have to put it in this perspective, Dennis. If you would have said on April 1st or March 29th when the season started that you would not have Lindor, Kipnis, Kluber, Carrasco, and Clevinger for 40 to 60% of the first half, depending on who you're talking about, I don't know if eight games out of first would be enough for me. I mean, I got to be perfectly honest. I mean, you got to look at the roster that this team started with. Max Moroff, Eric Stametz, Brad Miller, Hanley Ramirez. I mean, you know, and I'm not saying that this is a pass for them to be where they're at. I mean, I think they could be playing a little bit better. But I also think that you have to look at what they were able to accomplish in the month of June. They averaged 5 runs a game. They went 17-9. And I know that, you know, a lot of people, I've been on Twitter myself having a war with somebody over who called them complacent losers for losing 2 games to the Orioles over the weekend as badly as they did. And I said, look, it's 2 games in baseball. If you know Terry Francona, those games, while they count, they're 2 games. That's all that they were. They could have lost 1-0 or 13-0. I know the fans, you know, really right away want to jump on the, you know, well, you know, they can't afford to be doing this. But, you know, at the end of the day, they still are over 500 against teams under 500. They're still playing teams over 500 actually pretty well. It's those teams right in the middle that they're actually having some issues with. So I don't think that they're that far away. I think offensively, you know, if they're going to do anything at this trade deadline, I mean, I would think it has to be a bat. I would love to see them add an outfield bat, even though Oscar Mercado, I don't know anybody who could have thought he'd hit 314 in his call-up. You know, Tyler Naquin has shown flashes. Jake Bowers has shown flashes. But if you could get an established guy in left or right field, I think you might have to really consider that, even if it means Trevor Bauer, which I think is the name that's going to come up a lot in the next month. But, you know, again, not having 3/5 your starting rotation for a decent portion of the first half, and you're 8 games out, and again, you're pretty much right there as far as the wild card is concerned. I think they're about where I thought they would be based on that. I mean, if they had all those starting pitchers and, you know, and Lindor and Kipnis were healthy from day one, yeah, maybe at that point you could look and say, wow, they should be playing a lot better. But, you know, not having Lindor on opening day, I think, was a bigger thing than we thought, especially when you looked at who they started in his place. And even Kipnis, who has obviously had a pretty good last, 2.5-3 weeks. But again, this team has been built on starting pitching, and I think it does say a testament to you know, Chris Antonetti and Mike Chernoff that they were able to, you know, have guys in the back like Plesac and Savali and guys like that to be able to call on those guys to come up to this level and be as effective as they have been. I know Plesac got blasted on Saturday, but still, if you would have said that this kid could come up and you know, pitch pretty effectively for the most part, I think that that's a good thing. And I think that also, then again, does give them some leverage if they want to make a roster move come late July and pull the trigger on somebody.
Matt, you know I could talk baseball with you all day, football, basketball, but I really wanted to have you on because I have such admiration for what you are dealing with now. Can you just give the listeners what has happened to you over however many months? Tell us what happened.
I want to preface this by saying, you know, first and foremost, that I am okay and that, you know, I feel good. And that's, I think, the most important thing. And I owe a lot to, you know, my family, my friends, you know, and you know, Dennis, when something big in your life happens, you know, from a tragedy standpoint, whether it's losing a loved one or, you know, getting sick like I did or something of that effect, you really find out, you know, what people think of you and kind of who you're made of and everything like that. And I couldn't be more blessed as a person to have the amount of people that have reached out to me, people, some of which I've never even met, a lot of which I've never even met, you know, people in our industry, people, you know, in the news industry, you know, the weather industry. And, you know, it's you know, basically what happened to me is back in January, I started to suffer from some, you know, gastric disorders, I guess, if you will, or stomach disorders, kind of, you know, shoved it aside and thought it was just, you know, getting older and everything like that. I am 44 now. And, you know, in late April, it started to progress. And my wife, who works for University Hospital in a you know, more of a management role, we went to the University Hospital on April 28th. They checked me in. They thought originally it was pancreatitis, which is inflammation of the pancreas. They ran some more tests. And the next morning, you know, I'm laying in a hospital bed and the doctor comes in and he says, you know, we had a radiologist read your reports and it looks like that you have cancer. It ended up being stage 4 lymphoma cancer, which is a blood cancer. I did not have any need for having any surgeries. They have tumors removed or masses removed, which was a blessing. And here we are about 2 months, just over 2 months later. And, you know, we're fighting this every single day. I'm in chemo round 3 right now, as a matter of fact. I will go through round 4 on July 11th. And the next big date that I'm looking at as far as a progress is concerned is July the 8th. We'll have a scan and kind of see where everything is at. The cancer was very aggressive, which is why it was staged at 4 instead of, say, 3 or 2. It was in my stomach, kidney, and pancreas, which is, you know, again, you never want to hear those words. And I couldn't, you know, it was kind of a blur when everything kind of happened. But, you know, I used my faith as a background to basically tell myself that, you know, I wasn't going to allow myself to have anything but a real positive and you know, I don't want to say cheerful, but a good attitude about this. I wanted to be there for my family also, because I knew they would be kind of upset, and they were, of course. And, you know, and I looked at this like as a way of again, not only sharing, you know, some faith-based things I believe in, but also just that, you know, listen, bad things are going to happen to you in life. Sometimes things that you never expect, and you can either do one of two things. You can either, you know, crawl up in a ball and you know, and not talk to anybody and be upset about everything, or you can say, hey, what do we got to do to get past this? And I try to choose the later. And you know, I would be lying if I said every day was, you know, was a great day. There have been some bad ones in there, but for the most part, you know, things have been going in the upward direction, and that's really about all you can say. I certainly have learned a lot about cancer, I'll tell you that much. And you know, and you get to know a lot of people who are going through similar things, and I hope that, you know, for those people that have that they can, you know, if they want to draw from me, great. If not, I hope that they keep, you know, fighting with a good attitude.
Yeah, and I really would urge any of you out there who is looking for a pick-me-up on a, you know, on a anything you're going through, if you want to follow Matt Lodi on social media, you're going to learn how a positive-thinking spiritual man or woman, but in your case a man, attacks such a terrible, terrible fate. You know, or a hand that you were dealt, because I that's why I'm so amazed by you, Matt. Is it you are a man of God? Those of us who know you, we know you're a man of God. But it's like, it's one thing to be a man of God when things are going well. You are saying, "Hey, this is exactly why I'm a man of God, because I plan on having God take me through the rough times." You're not just a fair weather Christian, as it were.
Well, you know, Dennis, I mean, again, I'm not here to preach and tell people how to think in terms of their faith or their religion or whatever. But in my lifetime, you know, I've gone to a good church, I believe, a church that has many, many people in it who have stood by me from, you know, day one when this all came about. You know, again, family, friends, people on social media have reached out, you know, people in our industry have reached out. And as I said, as I told my wife from pretty much the day that everything came down, I said, look, we are going to fight this together, but we're also going to look at it like as an example of how we should act when things like this happen. You know, and as I said before, not every day has been, you know, bubble gum and puppy dogs and everything. I mean, there have been some dark days. I mean, there really has, especially, you know, the days of the test, the days of the chemo. And it, you know, and it really does test you as a person. But as I said, you know, to me, as again, a man of prayer, as a man of faith, and somebody who has a belief system that believes that the Lord is in everything, you know, I've said to myself, again, if you're going to sit there, like you mentioned a minute ago, if you're going to thank the Lord for what he's given you during the good times, you sort of have to accept the bad times. And I know some people that's very difficult, and I know that that's difficult. I'm not doubting that in people to believe that, you know, hey, you know, why is this happening to me? And that's perfectly normal to ask that question. I mean, I'm 44. I run 4 or 5 miles a day. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I don't do drugs. I mean, from a perspective of looking on the outside in, there's been a lot of people that have said to me, why you? And I've said, you know what? I don't have the answer to that. I will maybe one day get a chance to answer that or ask that question to the Lord when I go upstairs and we'll have a conversation. But to me, it's more about, you know, again, what you're made of as a person. And I didn't want to have the attitude of woe is me. I wanted to have the attitude of, you know, the Lord giveth, the Lord taketh. There's been a lot of other things in my life that could have gone a different way. I've been blessed in more ways than I know. And, you know, even if something on July 8th doesn't go correctly for me and the scan comes back and, hey, the cancer's still there, or, you know, we have a setback in this whole thing, I will not question, you know, why this is happening. And I think sometimes in life, you know, that's, like I said before, you kind of get a sense of who you are as a person and what you believe in. I mean, you can believe one way, you can believe another. I chose to go one way and to believe that, you know, this is, there's going to be some good that comes out of this. I don't necessarily know what. There already has been some good that's come out of this, but for me it was, this is how I'm going to attack it. This is how I'm going to look at it from this perspective, and whatever happens, happens.
Matt, thank you so much. How can people follow your journey and get your uplifting spirit through such a difficult time? How do they follow you on social media?
I do. Yeah, Twitter is probably, you know, for me, Twitter is a tool that I've tried to use not only to have, you know, intelligent discussions about sports and you know, have some fun and stuff like that. But also, I've really detailed a lot of this journey, you know, from April 28th all the way to today and what goes on. I'll be honest, I haven't updated as much as I was in the beginning because really right now we're just through the progress of it. So it's at Matt Lohde, M-A-T-T-L-O-E-D-E on Twitter. That's you know, certainly the easiest way. You could also check out my website. There are some things on there at neosportsinsiders.com as well. That's, of course, mostly sports-related stuff, but, you know, we have some personal things on there as well. But Twitter is probably the best way. And, again, I want to thank everybody. I did this the other day on another show that, you know, who have reached out on Twitter or, you know, sent me a DM like yourself. A couple people in the media, I mean, two people specifically that I really do want to take a second to thank. One is John Telich from Fox 8. He's been like just such an inspiration to me, you know, almost every single day texting me, asking me how I'm doing. And the other is Scott Zarrillo, who's one of the guys over at the Cavaliers who, you know, again, through this whole journey, you knew that there were people that are friends of yours, and you too, Dennis, you were always there for me as well. It's just like, you know, having that support group around you is so important, I think. And, you know, that's why I'm glad that I chose to document the journey instead of ignoring it or instead of, you know, kind of putting it aside.
Well, you inspire me, Matt, and I'm sure others, when they lock onto your situation and read your words, they will be inspired as well. Thank you so much, Matt, for taking the time. Keep up the great work and keep up the fight, and we'll be in touch.
Thanks, Dennis. I love you guys, and I appreciate it.
Take care. Matt Lohde, longtime sports media member in Cleveland, and his special cat. He is going through some very difficult times health-wise with cancer, but he fights it with a smile as best he can, and he fights it with faith and positivity, and that's not easy to do.